Welcome to the True Fitness Academy Podcast.
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 Your source for the truth in health and fitness. Now here are your podcast personal trainers, Jan and Tyler.
Hello and welcome to the True Fitness Academy Podcast. I'm Keon.
And I'm Tyler.
And we're your podcast personal trainers for today, Wednesday the 13th of 2010.
That it is.
Yeah, it's an exciting day.
It is exciting. I noticed today that there's less people at the gym.
Did you?
This morning.
Yeah. Wow. Huh.
Already so fast.
Yep, it's.
But, okay, scratch that though. Because there was the same amount of people, but I noticed new people, but the new people were gone.
Wait.
So, like, there was that core group of people that had been working out at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning with me.
Okay.
We'll just say there was 50 of them. So then, once the new year started, 100 people showed up. About out of that new 50, I only see 10, but there's a new 40.
Okay, so the first wave of people
have
gone, come and gone.
Majority of them have come and gone, and now we have a new wave.
Oh.
Which is interesting.
That's exciting. So. Yeah. I don't know. It's one of those things. I was talking to a woman the other day on the treadmill. She'd met with one of our trainers at the gym, and she's like, "I'm trying to come in every day, blah blah blah. It's really hard for me." And I'm like, "Well, if it's really hard for you, start with 3 days and build up. You know, like don't go balls out. I mean, it's like what we've said throughout. It's just like start slowly,
work it up,
work it up exactly." And you don't need to go crazy. Like, you don't need to run a marathon your first week. Like, that takes a little time.
I like that, though.
What?
Running a marathon the first week. That's good. That's sarcasm.
Oh. Sorry. Usually I can read your sarcasm well, Pat.
I hate running periods, so.
Right. My running group, we're meeting today for the first time. Very exciting. Wednesday, not when we're recording this.
I was recording this as this was Wednesday.
Okay, good. Because
way to pull back the curtain on that.
Well, you know,
that's
just
sometimes say it.
Okay, so today we're talking about lumbar flexion.
Okay. What is lumbar flexion?
Oh, baby. So lumbar, you've probably heard of lumbar support. Lumbar is the last five vertebrae in your, well, you have your sacral and whatever, blah, blah, blah. But the last five most important ones, in my mind. It's your lower back, pretty much.
It's the five right above the tailbone.
Right. So you have your cervical, which is your neck, which is the first seven. Your thoracic, which is the next 12. And then lumbar, which is five.
Those 12 make up most of your back.
Right. So if you think one easy way to remember cervical, thoracic, and lumbar, I was taught this many, many times, is think of breakfast, cervical, seven. Lunch, thoracic, 12, dinner, lumbar, 5. That's when a lot of people typically eat their meals, right?
Okay.
So you can think of it that way. Makes it simple. Oh, dude. Our buddy keeps calling me.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he's been calling me, like, throughout, and my phone is vibrating, and it's just one of those things, like, I didn't pick up 20 minutes ago. What makes you think I'm going to pick up now? You know, like, I'll call you back when I can. That's just frustrating.
Interesting kid.
Yeah.
Interesting kid, to say the least.
It's our friend from New York, if you guys remember him.
Yeah.
I don't remember what we've talked of him about, but or talked about him.
He's the rock climber and stuff like that. Wanted to fight me.
Yeah.
Do anything to it.
No,
so.
Because he's kind of, I don't know.
A wuss.
We'll just put it there. So, what's the whole deal? So flexion and extension are basic movements, and mind you, I'm trying to keep this as simple as possible, so if it sounds like...
I'll try and spit out my simplicism.
Right, Tyler will help out with that, and if it sounds like I'm oversimplifying to those of you who actually know what I'm talking about, bear in mind, I'm taking out certain key points that would matter to someone who's versed in biomechanics and anatomy to make this more accessible to the majority of people. So, just keep that in mind. So, flexion and extension, we'll just keep it the simplest way. If you turn your palm facing up and bring your palm to your shoulder, like a bicep curl. That's flexion. Extension would be a tricep extension. So pushing your arm away from your shoulder. Anything typically that brings the limb closer to the midline of the body is going to be flexion. Anything that brings it away is going to be extension. Make sense?
Yes.
Great. So lumbar flexion, if you were to lie on the ground and you felt between your back and the floor a slight curve, that's neutral, right?
Yes.
If you were to remove that space, so you have a flat back or an imprinted spine, that is lumbar flexion, okay?
Okay.
If you were to go the opposite way, you're into lumbar extension, which usually the lumbar spine here, these are the three spinal types, right? What's the difference between the two? It's just so I can not talk as much.
The lumbar is bigger.
Right. So we have more.
When I say bigger, okay, think of you have a kiwi is more of the cervical. Then your thoracic is more of an apple. And then the lumbar is a grapefruit.
Right.
Like, that's really not what the size of them are in real life. But visually, like, that's the difference.
Right. I like that. That's a good analogy.
No problem. That's why I'm here.
So, typically, the smaller structure has more mobility.
Yes.
So, the cervical, I mean, if you move your neck around, you got
a ton.
You
can go anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You have, like, almost 108. You have, a lot of movement there. Thoracic, if you move your upper back around, you have a lot of movement, but less than the cervical. Now, we're moving to the lumbar. So, lumbar, typically, they say you have about 15 degrees of lumbar flexion from neutral.
Yeah.
Okay? And what does that mean? Blah, blah, blah. It's not important for our discussion. But the whole issue is, I've been reading a lot of forums and a lot of strength coaches lately come out against lumbar flexion. And I've heard a lot of bad analogies. Like, if you imagine a pendulum, this is one I'm jumping straight to the heart of the argument. If you imagine a pendulum, you know, just hanging there, right? You can draw the pendulum all the way to the right or all the way to the left, and you can go in any direction with that pendulum, right? And the guy I was listening to is like, just because you can go there doesn't mean that it's good for the pendulum, right? Eventually, moving it around like that is going to break it. So there are certain people who are saying that flexing your lower back is bad.
How does one flex their lower back?
So a typical crunch would flex your lower back.
Okay.
Because you have to imprint and come up. And so that's a lot of load on your back. Pilates, a lot of the moves there is lumbar flexion. Yoga, a lot of that is lumbar flexion. Okay. Reaching down and touching your toes
has lumbar flexion.
A lot of lumbar flexion. Getting up in the morning, lumbar flexion. Sitting up on your elbows, lumbar flexion. Lumbar flexion is everywhere. So there's a difference, though, between loaded lumbar flexion and unloaded lumbar flexion, right? So unloaded lumbar flexion would be getting up in the morning because not very loaded at all. And there is some contention here as to what technically lumbar loading is. I know. This is
No, I for some reason, just like my eyes got really dried out and I was closing them. It's not a matter of me being tired. I don't think I blinked for a while, and so I was just closing them.
Got it. So a classic example of overloading your lumbar spine would be doing a deadlift with a rounded back.
Okay.
Because that would cause a lot of loading onto the lumbar spine. There are some people who believe that a crunch is actually loading your lumbar spine with a bunch of unadvisable forces.
Which is interesting if they don't think getting out of bed is.
Well, yeah, exactly.
If you don't think getting out of bed is, a crunch, you literally do. I've heard, there's a comedian that says it, that I do one sit-up a day. I get up out of bed. That's
right.
Half. The other half is when I go to sleep.
Right.
And so, if getting out of bed is not loaded, then how can a crunch be loaded?
Right. And especially, I mean, if you bring your feet up into a tabletop position, like above your body, that, I think, would add a little bit of loading.
More. Like, I get that, too, but in the sense of it.
Right. And my big thing is that, they say the reason that it's bad is that it can cause the facet joints and the ligaments and all that.
The what joints?
The ones that are between your spine. They're called facet.
Okay.
Those guys, I know, thanks.
No problem, that's why I'm here.
Those ones, can tire out and blah, 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 the joint capsules and all this, and the fluid in your spine will wear out with excessive crunching. And if you do it wrong, and if you add loading, so if you take a, this is why I don't do medicine ball crunches or plate crunches or any of that with any of my clients. I think that it's silly. Because, one, it's the same principle with doing a bicep curl. If you add consistent weight to your biceps, you're going to get bigger biceps, right? If you keep weighting your abdominals, wouldn't the same thing happen?
True.
So, there's...
Okay, so when you say weighted... Okay, sorry. So what I zoned out because I was thinking about you doing a crunch on a medicine ball, not holding a medicine ball.
Right.
And I was trying to figure out how that loaded it. But you holding a medicine ball or holding a weight...
is different.
But you said plate instead of weight, and so then I went to planks.
Oh, okay.
That's how my mind walked. And so it's adding a weight as you're doing the crunch.
Right.
Okay.
And mind you, I love medicine balls. I think they're great. I just don't think they're appropriate for doing crunches. Uh-huh. So there's that. Adding that external weight, I would recommend not doing.
Okay.
But doing crunches, like the whole point is, is from my perspective, is they're saying that you only have a limited number of flexions in your body.
Okay.
So you can only do so many lumbar flexions or bicep curls in your lifetime before the joint gives out, right?
That's interesting.
It's an interesting concept, but I think totally, like, flawed. Because, I mean, if that were true, everyone would need a knee replacement.
Yeah.
Everyone would need a hip replacement, you know, or every athlete at least, or sprinter, or whatever, because, I mean, here's a perfect example. Sprinters, at the end of their life, they do probably hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of more repetitions with their knee, ankle, and hip than your average person, but your average person is getting more knee and hip replacements than your sprinters, right? I mean, that would make sense.
Or what I was going to say is my shoulder is so messed up. I messed it up in high school.
Right.
Like.
But that was an acute, that was an actual injury, right?
Well, I mean, it was while doing it at work. I mean, it was during a workout.
Right.
I mean, I was doing a movement.
Right.
And it was because of that movement, it did what, it popped.
Right. Yeah.
And I didn't, the movement didn't help.
Right.
So it's just kind of like that concept of, huh, that's interesting that somebody would think that.
Right.
When it's always funny when people throw out stuff when I instantly come up with a counter argument.
Right. And, I mean, there's proof to the whole, if you don't move it, you lose it, right?
Okay,
like,
yeah.
If you don't go through that range of motion, you're going to lose that range of motion.
Well, here's something that was interesting. Like, this is how fast my mind wanders off. Avatar. We saw that movie Avatar, right?
Right.
Okay. The guy that was the main character.
Uh-huh.
His legs in that movie.
Didn't work.
He was paralyzed from the waist down. But the legs had no muscle on them either. Like,
right.
They looked almost scary.
Right.
Like, I had to look at them a couple times and be like, I was more like, did they get a guy that really was paralyzed or what? James Cameron was just that good and he got another set of legs or whatnot that did magic of some kind.
Right.
But, yeah, if you don't use it, thus being paralyzed, you're not using your legs, you're going to lose the muscles. You're going to lose the way, all that stuff.
Absolutely. And yeah, your tendons and ligaments and all that don't repair as quickly as your muscles do, but they do repair. So that to me is a failed argument. And biomechanically, yeah, you don't want to go through excessive lumbar flexion. I mean, you don't want to, try and hollow out your lumbar spine all the time, but, for a prime example, yoga people, Pilates people, typically say that their backs feel better after doing yoga and Pilates than before, right? And sure, they might, you know, whatever, there might be other things wrong with them, but if their backs are feeling better, their hips are moving better, their knees are moving better, their shoulders are moving better after doing lumbar flexion and extension of the thoracic spine. So, isn't that a sign that maybe there's not that loaded flexion isn't all that bad?
Oh yeah, I fully agree that it's not that bad. It's kind of those I feel like one person did a study on one person.
Mm-mm. There's tons of people going out. Like, if you go to, just Google, like, lumbar flexion, lots of studies come out saying, it's bad for you, it's bad for you, it's bad for you. But there has never been a long-term study done to see what the, on healthy individuals who have healthy spines.
I'd be interested to see on who they're testing. Because if it's, like, overweight people, I could then see how it might not be the best thing for them.
Yeah, I completely agree.
You know, where it's, you know, you and I are, I would classify as amateur athletic. Sure. Amateur athletes. We can do it.
Right.
The people that listen to us, a majority of them, probably could do it.
Right.
Overweight by 50 pounds probably wouldn't let you.
Not a good idea. There are much better choices. Like a plank.
Yeah.
Much better choice for an overweight person. Because that's going to train you to use the muscles right first, than to do excessive crunches. And crunches aren't that effective, but if combined with a comprehensive weight program, can be good for your abdominals.
Yeah.
And then doing Pilates and yoga, it's not just crunching. It's a bunch of other stuff as well. So let's talk about, like, Tyler, what are some of your favorite lumbar flexion exercises, now that we're on that topic?
I like the Superman.
Superman. That'd be extension.
Oh, you were on flexion.
I wanted flexion. We'll get into extension in a
second.
Then
I would go with the hanging leg raise.
That's a hardcore.
I like that one.
That's
or
a good
one. Or you
can
do the captain's chair.
Captain's chair, yeah.
Hang from it, but I like to do those ones.
That's a really nice one, because it's training your deceleration as well, because as you're coming down, you actually have to slow it down.
You get it coming and going.
Yep. That's what she said.
Yep.
Posing. I like that one a lot. I'm a big fan of the Pilates moves. So if you go take if you take a good Pilates class from a good instructor, you'll probably get some of those. We did a video about it a while back. You can go to our YouTube page, check that out. The core four, single leg stretch, obliques, double leg stretch, and scissors are all some of my favorite. I thought I was getting another phone call, and it's Tyler, actually, who's vibrating this time. Those are all four really good lumbar flexion exercises to me, because they train the core in a dynamic way. So I'd recommend those. Now let's go. So we talked about flexion, but you also have to get some extension. Otherwise, you're going to get that rounded posture that a lot of people have, which is not good either. So if you sit at your desk and just let your back fall into it, that is not healthy, right? You need to have that neutral spine. So Tyler was saying the Superman.
I like the Superman, where you lay on the ground and just kind of pretend like you're flying, like you lift your back up.
Right, right. And that requires some abdominal bracing, so that drawing in of your belly button to protect your back and engagement of your butt and thighs, right? I think that's a good one. I like swimming, so if you get on the ground and go into a half Superman, arms extended above you, and just kind of pretend like you're beating the water with your arms and beating the water with your legs. That's a really, really good exercise. Try and get 50 total repetitions out. So 1, 2, 3, 4. It's pretty quick.
So 25 each.
Yeah, 25 each side. But if you count to 50, I find it much easier. Instead of 1, 2, 3.
Too.
Right. And those are some really, really good exercises that you can do to get that thoracic extension, so your upper back and your lumbar spine, into a slight extension. You don't want to go into an excessive extension, because then it's just not
healthy.
You
break in half and you die.
Yep. Put simply. So is there anything that we haven't really covered? I mean, when you're doing weighted things, you want your spine in neutral. So deadlifts, squats, and all that. Neutral spine, which we've talked about. We're not going through it again. But anything else about the lumbar spine?
The lumbar spine, in that sense, it will help you in just your posture more than anything. Like, that's kind of the nice part of it. Also, this is, I feel, one of those areas that people that lift wrong hurt.
Absolutely.
And that's the people that, from lifting your groceries to a box while moving, if you lift with your lower back, that's what you're going to hurt this. So this is kind of a nice safety net for all health.
Right. And this is also tied into hip mobility and upper back mobility. So if you're not mobile in those areas, you're not going to get a lot of good work out of your low out of your crunch out of your abdominal work anyway. So there's that. I mean, this is a very simplified version of this argument because I mean, there's so much and there's a lot of biomechanical stuff and anatomical stuff that we could get into, but we're not because we want this to be accessible. This is pretty much it. So if you have any questions, email us podcast@truefitnessacademy.com. We'll get back to you. The rest of this week, we're talking about this Times article on how you can change your genetics. And Friday, we're talking about alcohol.
Booze.
So we've talked about it before, about parties and all that, but I think we're going to talk about some personal experiences, caloric usages, and we're going to go through our tried and true pre-drinking and post-drinking
regimens.
Ritual.
Yeah.
Very important to do the pre-work with that. Anything else for us, Tyler, that you want to talk about?
No, that should do it.
Fantastic.
So I will leave you with outlet.
Outlet. Wait. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Huh. You lost.
Seven, honey, outlet. That's where I've been so far.
I know. I was trying to think. I was like seven and honey. Like those could be, like honey could be sugar, you know.
Yeah.
Seven could be seven up. But no. Interesting.
Outlet.
Outlet.
Aha, I might have caught you into something you don't know.
Oh. Awesome. Well, we will talk to you tomorrow. You guys have a great rest of your day. Peace.